I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
It's 5 at 5 with Molly and Hall, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Molly Hall. 5 at 5 with Molly and Hall starts now.
The NFL made official. The Bears will host the Packers to open up the 2019 season, the league's 100th season. Which opening day excites you more, the Bears or baseball's on Thursday?
Well, baseball is more traditional, and I believe people get into it. They mark it on their calendars. There's a pomp. There's pageantry. There's all sorts of reasons to watch, and you get to, it's more symbolic. It's like the changing of the season. It's the arrival of a time in the, on the calendar that's very relaxing, and baseball sort of provides a soundtrack of summer. A lot of reasons to look forward to Thursday for White Sox fans, especially in the Cubs fans who, you know, are on their way to, you know, contend again for the fifth straight season, you would believe. So there's a lot of reasons for anticipation. But give me football, okay? Give me the NFL Week 1, starting in Chicago, Grant Park Festival, Bears Packers, 100th anniversary, all those things I am here for. You know why? Because if the Cubs get beaten on Thursday 10-1, they've got 161 more games. 161 more games.
Every over, game matters, David.
Over the Urgency next six year. And a half months.
Batting practice.
I know all those things are true, and I am on board with all this sort of rigidity that they've instilled in the structure that Joe Maddon has to follow and all this stuff, but they've got 161 more games after Thursday. If the Bears get beat by the Packers on opening night 35-7, it's not the same. There's 16 games, and there's only 8 on the lakefront. There's only 8 in town. Every game, every week in the NFL season is a season unto itself. So give me the NFL opener every single time.
Don't you think there's a reason the NFL decided to announce this when it did? Just in case you thought baseball was going to own this week. No, no, no. We're going to time our announcement, and we're going to do it with two of the marquee franchises in the entire NFL.
Well, that's baseball's fault for starting their season in March.
They started their season in March because they want all these off days. Remember that? Remember that idea?
Yeah.
So, which opening day still excites me more? And you really want to bring up opening day between the season opener between the Packers and the Bears? I'm not ready to talk about that yet. I still don't really enjoy talking about how the Bears season ended. I need a little more time and space here, okay? I just do.
You're from Texas,
okay?
You're from Texas. You can understand and appreciate that every day is Saturday. Or every day is Sunday, depending on whether you prefer college or NFL football.
Don't forget Friday and Thursday for high school.
And the Friday night lights. Okay. Yeah, you're right. So what are you complaining about?
I want my baseball time. All right. And I want it now. And I'm more excited for the season opener on Thursday because baseball is here. It is happening. Live in the now. And guess what? The Cubs do have some urgency, or what I would like to call a routine. And routine is often good for professional athletes. So give me baseball all day, right now.
If you asked me this question 2 days before Bears-Packers, the answer will be quite different. So if we do that, sure, I'll probably be more excited about Bears-Packers, one of just 16 games instead of one out of 162. I have a few issues here. Now, this Cubs and White Sox offseason has just been a slog, whether we're talking about missing out on Machado, all the off-the-field stuff with Russell and what Joe Ricketts had to say and the emails and all that stuff.
I forgot about that stuff, too.
And
I haven't.
We know. It also hurts a little bit that both teams are on the road. This city is going to be much more amped once we get closer to the home openers. I don't think it's a good thing that they're starting in March. It just feels a little off from what we're used to. And then starting the season in Japan, what shocking, baseball would mess things up. The NFL knows how to promote their product better than anyone, and they know how to put on an event. Now, if we're skipping forward to September 3rd, much more excited about Bears-Packers. But today, opening day around the corner, let's get here already after dealing with the Bulls and Blackhawks all winter.
Bulls play tonight. Not going to be on that one?
Pass.
Okay. To me, the phrase opening day in and of itself just means baseball more than any other sport. I mean, you can say, yeah, the Bears and the Packers, oh, they're opening day, opening night, party at Grant Park, whenever the Hawks open, if people care about that, and whatever you call that, opening drop. I don't know what the phraseology is there. But to me, opening day just means baseball. And David, like you said, with you know, the beginning of the spring and, you know, there's going to be baseball on now like every single day outside of the All-Star break from now until like October. And I think that's a wonderful thing with the weather improving and the Cubs will be in a race once again. The White Sox probably will not be, but there are lots of things on that side of the town to also observe and get excited about. And maybe later on in the season, you'll see some new faces there as well. So I'm much more excited for the opening day of baseball. And I was probably the only one here on the panel that was excited for Mariners Athletics out in Tokyo as
yes.
well. So it's no
yeah.
surprise.
I second that.
It's no surprise that
we
I'm
were the only ones that
here.
Saw it.
Right.
That's probably true. I don't know. You know, some grobber listeners, you know, loners, alcoholics, the unemployable. Some people were
carefully,
watching it.
Elia.
Insomniacs.
Sure.
First of all, have you guys been by Wrigley Field recently?
Because I try to avoid it at all costs.
it does not look
unless
ready.
I get free tickets.
There you go.
Doesn't look ready
at all for baseball.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still a couple weeks away
it
from
will
opening
be.
Day, right?
Yeah.
From opening day. It just looks weird walking around there and baseball season's about to start. But yeah, the fact that it's the week of opening day for baseball, I would say, I mean, Bears Packers in what, like 7 months? That doesn't really excite me. Right now, even though the draft is next week, let's see what Carlos Rodon can do as the number one starter in the White Sox rotation. Yoán Moncada, let's see if he can avoid three strikeouts in a game in his opening day plate appearances. Yeah, baseball for me, John Lester, the regression if he regresses, or Cole Hamels as well. I know that's all negative things for the Cubs and the White Sox.
Eli, that's pretty mean. I mean, Moncada, come on, Eli, you've been paying attention to March
it's
Madness.
It's spring, though. It's all
Moncada
spring.
Moncada hit, what did Moncada hit? He hit .354 in spring.
Like a .480 on base or
yeah.
something like
Didn't Ronaldo
that?
Yeah.
Lopez have what, like a 1.4 ERA last spring and then he struggled? I'm not in for this spring training means everything just yet.
Don't tell that to Ian Happ.
Go back to paying attention to Auburn.
Oh dear.
I think the only person that should answer those questions is him.
What did the Athletics report on the Cubs front office taking measures to create more structure and accountability this season say to you about the organization's commitment to Joe Maddon?
This is a referendum on Joe Maddon, and the timing is very, very, very important here because we all know that Maddon is in the last year of his contract. Maddon was, of course, famous for being the guy who didn't have a lot of structure, and suddenly a team that has won 95 games was not satisfied with that, and they wanted to do a complete overhaul of what they were doing in the process. And all of that says, we didn't like what was happening at the top. This was a top-down referendum. So to me, it says Joe Maddon's ways have been put on notice, and the timing of his contract issue is also something to consider here.
So we'll get back into this at the 6 o'clock top of the hour. But what the Athletic basically did was they compiled everything together, and they consolidated everything that's happened in this offseason. When this offseason has been about providing more structure to the Cubs, and whether it's trying to eliminate the amount of alcohol and fast food that's being consumed in the clubhouse, which I thought was very interesting. Whether or not they should have structured batting schedule, batting practice, mandatory batting practices 4 to 5 days per week,
even on American Legion Week.
I know. I don't even know if American Legion Week is going
gone.
To exist
this
year.
Oh, my God. Well, these aren't the Cubs I know.
And there's also, there's games that are going to be circled as trap games, and the executives are going to be making more trips. They're telling, basically, they're sending a strong message to a 65-year-old legend in Chicago. And that's what Joe Maddon is. I mean, Joe Maddon is a legend in Chicago. He won a World Series as a manager of the Cubs, and he's being told by his bosses that we don't trust you to provide the structure that we think that this team needs. And that's pretty bold, and that's pretty dramatic, and that's pretty much not a surprise to anybody paying attention, but it is significant. And so that's what it says, and you're right. The fact that they kind of foreshadowed the whole this by not offering him a contract beyond this year, we should not be surprised, and this is definitely consistent. But it's also very micro. It's micromanaging, and if some of these things were to happen with the Bulls and Jim Boylan were behind these things, people would be mocking it because it's very much hands on, and it's very much like you would think a college program is run with all these rules and all this structure. Theo Epstein does it, and it's genius, and it's something that we expect because he's got 3 World Series rings. I understand he has earned the benefit of the doubt, but let's call it what it is, and that's micromanaging.
The big bosses are doing everything they can to Joe-proof the 2019 Cubs. They are.
It is.
In recent years, they've said all the right things publicly, of course. They back Maddon again and again. But we know that they've had issues behind the scenes with the way he's handled things, and especially some of his managing in the playoffs, and look at the actions and look at what the players are saying too. They went and visited John Lester to talk about some of this stuff. After 4 years, sometimes the message gets really old, and now all of a sudden these players are older. They aren't the young pups just coming up trying to figure their way through the league and winning a World Series at the same time. So there are multiple layers to this, but I also think some of this is silly, like circling the trap games. So that means you're definitely going to win those games. You're going to try harder in those games.
And what if you lose them?
Yeah. I mean, it's baseball. You're going to lose some of those trap games. Then what happens? But I like some of the ideas because we don't know everything that was going on. We don't how much alcohol is being consumed on the plane and all of that stuff. But it's.
I thought John Lackey retired.
You wonder, in 162, is this really going to be the case once you get to the dog days of the baseball season? But this is all about the big bosses, and it'll be fascinating to watch Joe and how much he sticks to the plan throughout the entire year.
Yeah, I think Joe-proofing is an interesting way to put it. Pretty accurate from you, our Joe. How much he's seemingly being marginalized here, and it makes me think that, you know, with all of these other measures being brought in now to kind of refocus this group and take things more seriously and have more urgency, it makes me think that if Joe Maddon wasn't making the amount of money that he was making, he probably wouldn't be the manager this season. The only reason that he's here is because he's making, what, $5-6 million? They clearly are sick of his style, or they don't think that his style is conducive to this group of players anymore. They don't think that it's sustainable. And even in spring training, you kind of heard Theo and Joe saying things that kind of conflicted each other. So it seems like even with all these measures, they're still not exactly on the same page. And, you know, Joe is an old dog. He's not going to learn any new tricks at this point. He's steadfast in his ways. He's been very successful in his career. I'm sure in his mind, he thinks all of this is stupid. You know, we've been really successful over these past few years. I've been really successful here in Tampa with my methods. I don't think we need batting practice 3-4 days a week, whatever the hell they're bringing in. So
can't you understand where he's coming from if he does
absolutely
kind of push back a little bit?
Like I said, he's been very successful, yeah, whether it was here or with the Rays. And in his mind, you know, he's a stubborn guy. We've realized that for sure by now. I'm sure in his mind he feels a little slighted, marginalized, offended by all of this. And I don't think it's crazy to think that if the Cubs are floating around 500 around the All-Star break, around the center of the season, you might see a managerial change. Because this doesn't look like synergy or cohesion from where I'm sitting.
Right. I mean, the structure would make it appear that they're trying to push Maddon out the door by season's end at least. But to me, if the Cubs win the NL pennant, I can't see them not bringing him back. I think it would take a first round exit, another wild card exit or a no playoff appearance for the Cubs to say goodbye to Joe Maddon. If they win the NL pennant, obviously you win the World Series. I think he's back in town regardless of the structure stuff.
Blank check?
Blank check could happen too.
I mean, if they win the World Series, then what's his price? How much are you going to pay a manager if he comes back.
Blank check. We're talking about the 2019 Cubs here.
I know.
David. They couldn't even afford to pay
I'm just saying.
Drew Smiley.
A couple bucks.
Wow, very tough question. Very, very hard.
Regarding the White Sox, was Lucas Giolito a surprise as the team's designated number three starter? When Sox minor league director Chris Getz called Louis Robert a fast riser, how fast? And could Robert be on the South Side in 2019?
Glad we're paying a little attention to the White Sox. I shouldn't have been surprised. I think Giolito was a guy, you understand what they're expecting out of him, what they want to see out of him. But you look at the 2018 season he had and maybe some of the outings he had this spring, and it was deflating. Is that too strong to say when you see he's the third starter for the White Sox? I don't know that I have a ton of confidence in a guy who led the American League in walks and is one of the guys who struggled with his control. I know they need him to succeed for things to go right. I just think he's very replaceable. And if you get a guy like Dylan Cease coming on the scene sooner rather than later, to me, I would project maybe Giolito is the most vulnerable of the five starters. So I don't know that I was surprised, but somewhat I would encourage you tempering your enthusiasm if you're expecting too much out of Lucas Giolito. As for Louis Robert, I think that's the opposite. When you look at what he is capable of, you know, he didn't play against a lot of major league competition before he was sent to the minor league camp, but he was 5 of 13, two triples, a double, and a game-winning home run, and then he got hurt. To me, that's going to be the biggest challenge with him, is that staying healthy, because if he does stay healthy, Chris Getz might be right. He might be a fast riser. I don't know if you'll see him in 2019, but it wouldn't shock me, and how exciting that may be, because now that you've seen Eloy Jimenez being promoted and signed and locked up, and he's going to be at Guaranteed Rate Field every single game for White Sox to appreciate and to enjoy. The next guy you're kind of looking at, yeah, Cease is going to be here too, sooner rather than later, but Luis Robert is an exciting player. He's a great prospect, and it wouldn't surprise me if he's one of these guys later in the season that is too good to ignore.
Lucas Giolito at one point was one of baseball's top pitching prospects, and then he fell off big time. We've seen his lack of control on the mound. We've seen what happens if he allows back-to-back walks in a single inning, and then the floodgates come open as far as runs scored are concerned. The only guy who had more walks than Lucas Giolito as far as qualified pitchers was our very own Tyler Chatwood in Chicago. That's not how you want to see these guys 1 and 2. Giolito still has a lot of upside. Don Cooper seems to think that he is fixable. If there is a guy who can fix him, I would bet Coop could. But this is a huge year for him, whether he likes it or not. And Giolito's got to get his mental game in order. He's an overthinker. It's well known. But having him third in the White Sox rotation makes sense because of the investment they've already put into him. They're still giving him that chance. They have the chance to give. So why not let him try to work out his issues, especially since he's still a relatively young pitcher. Now, as far as Luis Robert, he is still only 21 years old. He still has a lot of time to put in at AA, just like we saw Eloy Jimenez do, and then AAA. They're not going to skip grades with these guys. Dylan Cease spent significant time in AA before. He is expected to go to AAA. So even though Luis Robert might be a fast riser, I still don't know that we're going to see him in 2019, unless perhaps it is in September, and that would be after he's done a lot of work at the plate.
90 walks for Giolito. I mean, here's the thing. What are your other options? I don't think it's really a big deal after Rodon, after Lopez, about who slides in, whether it was Nova or Giolito, since we already knew that Santana was fifth and last night was just his second spring start. I don't think it's a big deal. Maybe it gets him a little more confidence, but it's obviously all about the walks. It wouldn't shock me at some point this season if it just gets to a point where...
Joe, does it suggest they're worried about his confidence? Because if they left him
they definitely
out
are.
Of the rotation,
yeah.
Would you crush him? I mean, would you lose him for at least a little bit?
Yeah, so they want to start the season with a little more confidence, but would it shock you if he's sent down at some point this year? It wouldn't for me either. And if we're getting a couple months into the season and his walk rate is still this high, this lofty... he might be sent down. So not a big shock that he's the number three starter, but it doesn't mean that he has anything locked up for this season. It doesn't mean that he's definitely going to be at the majors all year. As far as Luis Robert, I understand he's a fast riser, but they're not going to start, as Layla mentioned, skipping steps. They're not going to change the program here on a guy that's 21. I think that there is zero chance, no matter what he accomplishes at the other levels, in probably multiple levels this year, that he is up with the majors. Sure, he could end in AAA, and maybe he's here in 2020, but they want to see the plate appearances, force our hand, same situation as all of the other guys. They're not going to change things up with Robert.
I'm really not surprised Giolito was the number three starter. He was really bad last year, one of the worst pitchers in the American League. But when you're a rebuilding team, you're kind of afforded this luxury, I guess, if you want to call it that. You're allowed to send a guy out there. Even if you don't think the results will be great, you can kind of send him out there and work on stuff and hope for the best and hope that he does realize his potential. Because like you guys all said, at one point, Giolito was one of the best pitching prospects in baseball. He did throw upper 90s. He did have that big breaking curveball. But now the velocity is down even from a couple of years ago. He can't really get that curveball over consistently as a strike. And last year, you really ever rarely saw him have even two pitches in a game that he felt comfortable with throwing four strikes, and which was one of the reasons you saw the walk rate up there so high. So, you know, you just throw him out there again this year and you hope for the best. There's still some untapped talent there, no question about that. It's just a matter of putting it all together and throwing strikes. As far as Robert goes, I mean, he's in starting the season high A ball. He's had 300 plate appearances career in the minor leagues. He's had a lot of injury problems himself, and he is only 21 years old. I don't envision him getting a call up this year to the major league level. I think if all things work out for him injury-wise, production-wise, he'll probably end the season at Charlotte, and I think that's a good thing. You don't need to fast-track him or anything like that.
Yeah, going back to Giolito, Joe remembers this when he was on Hit and Run last year. He talked about throwing into a tunnel, so just repeating his mechanics, and that's so important for a pitcher. But then you see him in spring, and granted, the only month he had with the under 4 ERA last year was in August with a 3.86, and then he regresses negatively in September. After he talked about throwing in a tunnel in earlier that month. And then you think about in spring, the 5-1 walk ratio or walks to strikeouts ratio, that's not good. And I would expect him to be sent down at some point this season as well, assuming that continues into the regular season and as opening day pops up here this week. And then with Robert, I can't expect the White Sox to call him up this season, especially with how they obviously with Jimenez last year, player control, that sort of thing, you want to have him for as long as you possibly can, and they're not going to rush up many prospects. I would expect actually Madrigal to be up quicker than Robert.
Didn't Giolito try neurofeedback or something like that in the offseason as a means of trying to straighten himself out mentally? Did you remember that story? That beginning of spring training, you talked about that?
That's a disturbing thought.
He was self-regulation of brain function.
He's thinking too much.
That's a guy.
He just is.
Yeah.
It's a great question.
As opening day approaches, what is the best division in the National League and the American League, and which team could surprise us the most?
Okay, so as far as the best division in the National League, I've given this a lot of thought. The NL East has a lot of star power. They've improved greatly. But top to bottom, it is absolutely the NL Central. When you think about all the players each team has added, except for the Cubs, who still won 95 games last year, it's a staggering thought. The Brewers added to their lineup. Yasmani Grandal is a big bat. He is significant. They likely stand to get more healthy. Think about what the Reds have done. It's not going to be so easy to face Cincinnati when you've got Yasiel Puig, Matt Kemp, and then they added about 12 dudes who are probably going to make a big difference as well. Derek Dietrich, Jose Iglesias, Sonny Gray, Tanner Roark, ring a bell, Alex Wood. These are all guys that are still very, very serviceable. Let's not forget what the Cardinals did with a guy named Paul Goldschmidt. And if Matt Carpenter is anything in the beginning of the season like he was in the second half, that's a concern as well. So give me the NL Central. As far as the American League is concerned, how do you not say, unfortunately, the evil empires of the AL East? What the Yankees did on the mound, their bullpen is disgusting. as to who they've added. Good luck trying to get a hit against them in the late innings of a game. And then their starting rotation, thanks to the Jame Paxton and Jay Happ additions, are really good as well. That said, I think the team that might surprise us actually in baseball might be the Rays. The second wild card out of the American League might actually be the Tampa Bay Rays, given that they put together some pretty significant win streaks. And if you're into this sort of thing, they did get a decent hitter in Avi Garcia if he stays healthy. I don't know.
Oh, wow. You're basing your Rays love on Avi Garcia going to Tampa?
I just think it's a funny thing to say.
You know,
they have put together some very good win streaks
last year. They have. You know, they're one of three teams in the East, in the American League East, that won 90 games last year. And I think that's enough to call them the strongest division in the American League. I don't know if the best team will, the Yankees look like the best team. The Red Sox are defending champion. It's difficult to look at other divisions, even as good top to bottom as the NL Central is, and say that it's better or deeper when you have the quality at the top of the American League East. So it's easy question to answer in the American League. It's the East. In the National League, to me, it's a Central, even though the National League East is going to challenge. I would not be shocked if the Mets have encountered a little controversy this spring, but with the Mets, the Phillies, and the Braves, they could be three teams that are very competitive, and the Nationals are going to be better than I think people think without Bryce Harper. They have a strong rotation if they stay healthy. It's all about the health with the Nationals. So it wouldn't shock me if the NL East is better top to bottom than the NL Central. I don't know about the Brewers. I think they're going to encounter a team as reliant on a bullpen as they are. Knowing the up and down natures of bullpens from season to season, they deserve the respect that they have earned last year. I love Craig Counsell. I think he's a terrific manager, but it wouldn't shock me if they take a step back either. So I would think that the surprise team may be a team out of the East. And maybe the Phillies, maybe that's not going to surprise anybody, but they look good. And the strongest division is up for grabs. But I'll give a slight edge to the Central.
The NL Central is the deepest division, but it's not the best. The best division is in the NL East because of the number of teams I think that can be championship contenders. And you start at the top with Washington, Philly. And then don't forget what Atlanta pulled off last season, a very young team on the way back. Even though they lost Bryce Harper, I love this Nationals team. They have the strong rotation, Scherzer and Strasburg at the very top, and they added it to the middle, and I don't think they're going to miss Harper a bunch. Juan Soto, Robles, Rendon is an NL MVP candidate, Trey Turner, and maybe Adam Eaton can actually stay healthy for a full season. I think they're going to have a wonderful season. And Philly, it wasn't just Harper. They had McCutcheon and JT Realmuto. They're going to be really strong. So I have the NL East as the best division. American League, agree. It's the AL East. You have a couple of possible champs with the Yankees and Red Sox, of course. And this division also has a surprise team. With you, Layla, Tampa Bay could end up having a big year contending for the wild card.
Okay, how is a team that won 90 games last season a surprise the next year? Can anyone explain that to me?
Because they're in the AL East.
Nobody's
and they couldn't even have
them.
A starting rotation.
Nobody's talking about them.
They had openers.
Okay, that's fine. I think the AL East is the only division in the American League that's really, you look at it and you don't know who will win it, whether it is New York or Boston or even Tampa. Yes, I think they'll be pretty good again, but you could probably pencil in Cleveland as the winner in the Central. Minnesota might hang around a little bit. Out West, of course, Houston's going to run away with that thing. But the National League in general, I think, is very deep and very competitive. Every division, you know, you have two or three or in some cases four different candidates to be able to win the whole damn thing. I mean, you look at the Central. We've talked about that a lot, obviously, because we are the Cubs station, I've been told. But, you know, you don't know if it's Milwaukee or St. Louis. Pittsburgh's going to be in the race. Cincinnati's going to be better. I have no idea who's going to win that division. I have no idea who's going to win the East. Joe, I'm with you on Washington. I think they're going to be just as good, if not better, despite losing Bryce Harper.
They're going to be better.
Their outfield is just as good as it was last year with Soto and Robles getting ready to bust out. They added Corbin into an already stellar rotation. They're not going anywhere. And in the West, I think, is where my surprise team is. I think it's going to be San Diego Padres.
Oh, my.
You might have heard about this guy named Manny Machado who signed out there.
Not enough pitching.
Too soon, right?
Maybe a year early on that. They don't have great pitching. You're right about that, Lele, but they're going to score a lot of runs with that lineup.
Prospect.
And they've got a lot of good prospects. You're going to see Tatis this season. You're going to see Urias this season. You're going to see Mackenzie Gore come up and pitch sometime this year. And that division, I think, is very vulnerable because L.A. won't be as good as they were last season. Colorado still hanging around. Arizona's going to be worse. Padres might open some eyes.
That's a Sox fan's nightmare, isn't it? Seeing Tatis Jr. and Manny Machado lead the Padres into contention.
Oh, that's their infield of the future, man. We got to get used to that.
I wouldn't call it a nightmare. It's a little disconcerting.
Okay.
But,
maybe it's a bit overstated.
Yeah.
We'd never do that here.
Thank you.
I'll work backwards here. I'll say my surprise team is the Minnesota Twins. I heard you, Kevin, dismiss them a little bit. But you think about Pineda, if he's able to return to his Yankees form, and granted that's a stretch coming off Tommy John, but you add Nelson Cruz, you add former Ray, CJ Cron, I think that offense could be a little bit improved.
Berrios might win the Cy Young.
Yeah.
I mean, he's unbelievable.
If he's able to return to form from what he was 2 years ago when the Twins made the wild card game, and of course they lost to the Yankees, which they do every time they make the frickin' postseason. But you think about the NL. I thought I was going to be contrarian here because I thought everyone was going to say the NL Central, but then most of you guys said the NL East. I'm going to say the NL East. I think the Nats, and obviously, like you mentioned, David, getting Cano for the Mets, kind of a rebuild on the go there. Even though you would like to see them just flat out rebuild after the last couple seasons. But that Nats rotation, even with what the Phillies did with Harper, is ridiculous. To have Strasburg and Corbin and Scherzer, that 1-2-3 is one of the best rotations, just makes it up in baseball. And then in the American League, I would say the AL East, obviously.
I don't think he's just doing a leg pull here, if that's the question.
On Monday, celebrity attorney Michael Avenatti was indicted for allegedly trying to extort Nike to the tune of nearly $25 million after threatening to reveal the shoe company was paying off high school basketball recruits. Well, this scandal with potential NCAA implications cast a cloud over the Sweet 16. Well,
it's a very optimistically worded question because it says, will this scandal cast a cloud over the Sweet 16? The Sweet 16 didn't need this to cast a cloud over it. I mean, there's corruption that looms over college basketball as a rule. I mean, what March Madness allows us to do is gives us 3 weeks maybe as a respite from the hypocrisy that the NCAA sort of, you know, represents so often. So this was more amusing than it was maybe indicative of anything when you have Michael Avenatti, the celebrity attorney, Stormy Daniels' attorney, indicted 14 minutes after threatening to extort Nike and expose some names of California AAU coach, I believe. That was something that made for a fascinating news story, the inclusion of Mark Garagos in being named as a co-conspirator potentially. Is interesting. All this stuff is interesting, but I don't think that it adds any more to the cloud hanging over college basketball that we already have seen with LSU suspending its coach, Will Wade, and there's already Sean Miller, Arizona's involved in problems and scandals. So they didn't need this to remind us that there is corruption all throughout college basketball.
I'm pretty sure that if you are indicted by the Southern District of New York or charged, you probably don't keep your license. So I'm just going to call him a loudmouth. Michael Avenatti. That is the ultimate case of life comes at you fast. He thought he was going to pull a fast one with some super low-hanging fruit. We're going to hold a press conference to disclose a major high school college basketball scandal perpetrated by Nike that we have uncovered. Who do you think you are, Olivia Pope from Scandal? You're not an investigator. And then the Southern District comes in with their own tweets, which apparently I need to be following, and they just slap him in the face. Michael Avenatti charged with engaging in a scheme to extort Nike. The biggest significant point to me in all of this is it just points out the very, very obvious, which is nobody's going to not believe you if there is a scandal in college basketball. And that's the problem. And by the way, there's enough money to go around. Figure it out. Share it.
Avenatti hasn't seen a TV camera that he didn't just love over the last few years. I've seen enough of this guy for a lifetime. We understand our college sports are dirty. But once we get to Thursday, this is going to be the punchline that it is right now. A blip on the radar. People won't pay attention. We're going to have eight what look like great matchups set up for Thursday and Friday. And this will not cast a cloud at all.
No, nobody's going to think about this when they're watching Zion Williamson next weekend and they're watching North Carolina and they're, you know, hoping the Ducks can be that one double digit seed to make a run. Nobody cares.
How about Zion Cam? What do you think about this when you're watching Zion Cam?
No, absolutely not. I try not to think about Michael Avenatti ever. I mean, this guy is just the personification of sleaze and grime and grifting.
So and I guess he's not running away, for president now?
Well, measure, he'd be a perfect candidate for president. Just saying, he's a sleazy
wasn't
grifter.
At one point he considering a run?
Well,
like with everybody else?
If he's a sleazy, lying grifter, he's perfectly qualified to be the president of the United States.
Some good drops.
If he just goes away, the sooner he goes away and the sooner all these NCAA slime balls all go away too, they can all go on some desert island together somewhere where I won't have to think about them or look at them or discuss them.
First, it's Condoleezza Rice trying to change AAU basketball last year.
She can go away, too.
It's just terrible. It doesn't make any sense. I don't even want to get into that. I'll go on another rant. But, yeah, that's Michael Avenatti yesterday. No one can take the happiness I'm going to have over the next 2 weeks away from me. So, no, this will not change the way I watch March Madness and the way the public perceives it.
That's a relief, Eli. I was worried about you. You've been smiling a lot around here, and we need that to happy, cheerful Eli.
All right, Eli, for coffee run.
Baby, let's go.
That's the 5-5. So the NFL made official the Bears are host of Packers to open the 2019 season. Which opening day has you more excited? Chicago, the Thursday openers for the White Sox and the Cubs, or the anticipation already for week one of the NFL season here at Soldier Field? What did the Athletic report on the Cubs front office taking measures to create more structure and accountability say about Joe Maddon? Are you impressed with the White Sox naming Lucas Giolito the third starter as opening day approaches? Which is the best division? And do you have any thoughts on attorney Michael Avenatti being indicted after allegedly trying to extort Nike to the tune of $25 million? Mully and Haw, Leila Rahimi in for Mully. We'll be back at Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.